At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscience meeting. My name is Vanessa. I'm definitely an alcoholic. And I had this epiphany the other night. I was in a book study meeting, and they were talking about once the spiritual malady is overcome, the physical and mental will follow. And I realized that, or the mental and physical will follow. And I realized in my drinking days, I did everything backwards. And I was like, well, if I get abs, then I will then start reading self-help books and heal my inner child. And then I'm going to yoga. And then I'm going to get a swami, like a spiritual advisor. And then once I do that, then he'll help me work on being mad at everybody because I'm mad at everybody. And then once I do that, then I'll go ahead and get spiritual and stop drinking. And I realized that in this program that you kind of have to do it the other way if you're an alcoholic. So when I came in here, it was because I drank for a very long time. It stopped working. I wanted to die. And so I came in here, and the first thing I said was stop drinking, which was devastating to me because I could not imagine my life without alcohol. But I did, with a lot of help and white knuckles. And I got a sponsor. I worked the steps, my life changed. And the obsession was lifted, and when I first came in, the God word scared me to death because I didn't think if there even was a God that higher power would want to help a person like me. And I've realized in these rooms that that there is an amazing higher power in my life today, and that I'm always taken care of. And if I do this stuff every day, then I've got a good shot at staying sober, which is ultimately why I came in here. So I'm really grateful for this program. It's amazing and it works. I was the booziest person I knew. Today I'm not boozy anymore. It's just I keep pinching myself sometimes. I can't believe it. So anyway, thanks for letting me chair. My speaker. There are those people that you meet in this program that you think, when I grow up, I want to be like that person. Just every time he shares, he has something great to say, and he's so genuine, and he doesn't think he's got this, but he's just very generous. He always wants to share what his experience and what he's learned, and he makes me laugh, which for me gives you major cred. Like if you can make me laugh, I instantaneously like you. So anyway, he's just a great guy. He's got a wonderful story. I'm looking forward to hearing it, and I won't talk anymore. Thanks, Nelson, for being here. Nelson!
My name is Nelson. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I got to set myself up here because I'm a little left-brainy, you know what I mean? So the timer's got to be on so I don't speak too long on any one thing, you know. And first of all, I got to have my literature, my 12 and 12, and my AA big book, because there's a lot of opinions in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful for them. But we have literature that gives us the guidelines. And so I may refer to it and I may not, but looking at them helps me stay anchored. All right, enough of that. Okay, I'm kind of left-brainy sometimes, so I'm going to throw out the numbers because every time I go to a speaker meeting, I'm there, if he got sober when and this and that, so how old is he now and whatnot? So I'm just going to give it to you. All right? Born in 1956... That's right. I am now 56. I came into this program in 1986, and I was 30. And if I was a one-chip wonder, that would have been March 9th, 1986, when I picked up the phone and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. So now that we have all the numbers out, right? Everybody okay with that? Okay. So I was born and raised in the northern island of Puerto Rico, Manhattan. I love my hometown. I have to tell you because it is important. When I used to look across the East River, I thought I was looking at Europe. And when I looked across the Hudson, I thought that was China. Because everyone I went to school with came from, their family came from someplace else. You know, so we were all born and raised in the city in Manhattan, but all our parents came from someplace else. And so to me, it was normal for someone to speak another language. And, you know, when I guess I was around 12 years old when I realized that there are people who only speak English. That was kind of freaky, you know, like, really? Only English? Yeah. So that was my exposure to growing up, was a lot of different people, you know, and I'm grateful for it. East Village, I don't know how many people are familiar with it, but the East Village has always been a live wire. And being born in 56, the 60s was really wild. My Boy Scout troop met in the St. Mark's Church in the East Village, and so every time I walked to our troop meeting and walked back, it was an education. We had hippies, we had young lords, we had Black Panthers, we had transvestites, we had, you name it, we had it. Okay? Also during the 1960s, there was this thing going on called Vietnam. And that to me was something that was present, because I have four, count them, four older sisters. And lots of therapy on that. I'm feeling much better about it. So there was occasions that we would go to funerals for some of their high school, you know, buddies that came back. And, you know, and so war was something very present for me. Drugs, lots of it. All right, a lot of heroin during that time. So you would hear about people ODing and such. So by the time I was like in the fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, you know, there were things that were very real to me. You know, war was real. People dying was real. And you know, and that's something that Alcoholics Anonymous helped me understand, because I always had this underlying fear. This is something that is part of my story, and that is that I was sexually molested at the age of 5, and I didn't realize how much that had impacted me. And then at the age of 12, unfortunately, my parents, due to their own dysfunctional whatever, moved us to Puerto Rico, and I'm from New York. So here I am in Puerto Rico, pretty place, but I'm from New York, and anyway, they have this system where you, they're public cars and they're regular cars, and the way you identify them is by an orange plate. But I'm from New York, and so I showed up late, and I got into the wrong car. And so I was molested again, and that time it was, you know, I was 12. So by the time my family came back to New York, I had these secrets. And what I found was that when I drank, guess what happened? Didn't give a shit. So I had this fear, this anxiety about me all the time. But when I drank, it went away. So one of the things that I did, I used to be I used to shine shoes on Avenue C and East 5th Street. And I used to yell out, "Shoe shine, Mr. 25 cents. So I always had my own money. And I always found a way to get my own money. So I always had enough money to get somebody to buy my booze, even if I was 11, 12, and 13. So alcohol really worked for me. Okay? And I need you to know that without alcohol, I don't know if I would have lived past my teenage years. So I had no coping skills. I sure as hell wasn't going to tell anybody what had happened to me. And that anxiety on a kid that is entering puberty and in the streets, and you know, you don't show weakness in New York City, because if you do, you will get pounced. So alcohol took that edge off, you know, and so I would do things like I would go to the boys club and learn how to box. And if I did get in a fight, I purposely lost my mind. And then that way, everybody say, "That is one crazy SOB. Don't mess with him." You know? So, and that was how I felt I always had to protect myself. The thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that Alcoholics Anonymous took me as a victim. And Alcoholics Anonymous, through the tools that we have here, showed me that I was a survivor. And then Alcoholics Anonymous, through guiding me through a spiritual program and allowing me to have the God of my understanding, I became victorious. And I think that's one of the things that I really want to bring home to people, that it is your God that you go to. And if you follow this program, you get to go from the victimization of your past to recognizing that you survived, and then you become victorious. And one of the things that I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous is that when I am of service to someone else, I am victorious. Mm-hmm. So I was able to utilize, through the program, those traumas that I sustained that I swore I would never tell anybody. And I'm telling it to you now. And I use that. I use that a lot with my sponsees. We are as sick as the secrets we keep. So, alcohol really worked for me. And after going through that, I was like, what else could happen to me? So, what did I do? I start hitchhiking. Hey, from New York City down to the Jersey Shore. All right? I was like 13 years old. I went to my parents and I emotionally divorced myself from them and said, you know, you all don't have your shit together. So from here on out, I think I'm going to do what I want to do. And they looked at me like, should we kill him now or wait? But literally at 13, 14, I was one of those juvenile delinquents. I did not come home at 10, 11, or 12. It was 2, 3, and 4 in the morning. And I remember my father waiting for me with the belt on the front stoop. And he said, no, I'll wait till you're sober before I beat the shit out of you. And I was like, that's fine, you know. And I was just rebellious, and I was just taking such chances, you know. At 16, I got to tell you, Woodstock happened. And that kicked me in the ass because, you know, I was trying to finagle a way to get up there, you know what I'm saying? And I was like 13, 14, and I'm trying to figure it out, you know, how do I get up there? And I didn't make it. But came along this thing called Marisol, which was an international rock festival that was in 1972. I was 16, bought my ticket, got my booze, and I planted myself there for a full week. And let me tell you, I was 16 and I looked 11. But I had all the booze. Everybody else had the drugs. I had the booze. So there was an exchange that went on. It was quite favorable. So I come home from my experience in Marisol, and I was like sun poison. I lost 15 pounds, you know. But let me tell you, from what I do remember, the bands were great. So I come back, and I'm like, okay, what's my next adventure? And it was, I'm going to L.A. So I announced to my parents, I will be leaving in May. And mind you, I'm 16. And, you know, my mother saved my life because my mother says, look, we got family in Vegas. Why don't you go to Vegas? And I looked at the map, and I said, well, she's buying the ticket. That's going to save me about $200. I'll hitchhike to L.A. And so at 16, I moved to Las Vegas. And that was devastating. Alcohol has always been a part of my story, but I am a child of the 70s, so there were a lot of other recreational chemistry that went along. But booze was always in my hand. So, total devastation, lost, I don't know how much, but I was this high. I grew like, within like 6 months, I grew like 9 inches, I don't know. But anyway, so I was this height and 115 pounds. And when I went back to New York, because I really made a mess of things in Vegas, and my mother saw me, my mother fainted. And when I realized the trauma that I had caused this woman, I turned it around, you know. I just totally turned it around because I couldn't kill her, and I was killing her. So I went from being the juvenile delinquent to the hero. And worked, got my own place, party, but I did the next right thing. You know, I was basically the hero. As time went by, I had some really great jobs. I worked at the hospital. That's the other thing about being victorious over sexual molestation as a child, is that you could smell when someone's hurt. You know, and you move to help them. My self-worth and self-esteem was in the toilet. But by me helping others, I felt better about myself. And I'm grateful for that. So I always worked in the healthcare industry. So I had a great job at the local hospital, you know, and life would look good, but I was dying on the inside. At the ripe old age of 19, I converted to being an alcoholic. And I remember that day distinctively because I was lying in the bed and I knew something changed. All right? I was doing double H's, Heineken and Hennessy. And I had done so much that I was just out of it. And I'm lying in the bed and something changed in me. And after that, it was a struggle for me to contain my alcoholism. But I felt like dirt. Alcohol used to make me feel better, but now I have to drink, right? So I'm feeling like crap. So what do? I become the star performer. At any job that I had to be the absolute very best. There was no second place because I felt like crap for what I did the night before when I was drunk. So finally, as time went by, I realized that I had to make a change. And I do have to let you know that my family has served the United States military since 1898. My family has always had this thing about the Puerto Rican Army of the United States. And my mother's brother, who she loved very much, died in Korea. So I always had this thing like I had to do the military thing, you know. No one ever said, you're going in the military. But I knew it was an obligation I had to complete. And I said, you know, maybe if I go into the military, I'll learn discipline and I won't drink. Right. So anyway, so I go in the military and I become a U.S. Navy hospital corpsman. And I am very grateful to say that I also serve with the United States Marine Corps. And those two branches, to me, have a place in my heart. And I served with honor and distinction. I went into critical care nursing. I became the very best that there could be. I was second in my command for advancement. I'm telling you, I did not screw around. Because at night, I would get drunk and I would do stuff that people say, dude, do you know what you did? And I didn't want to know. But the next day, I would perform. So when I was in the military, I was stationed in Virginia, and I wanted to continue with my training in critical care and battlefield medicine, and I wanted to go someplace where I could advance that. So I ended up in the hospital at Okinawa, Japan, and from there I served with the Marine Corps as well. The thing about it is this, is that I had to be the best at what I did. But not only did I have to be the best at what I did, but my appearance was like absolutely critical. So when I used to go to the gym to lift weights, I didn't lift weights just for, you know, because I wanted pecs and you know, and guns on, you know, on my arm. I did it because I felt like dirt. So when I got into the military, that something happened there. One of the things that I did not want to admit was that I was gay. I did not want to be. I was engaged 5 times to 3 different women. I really didn't want to do this. So I get into the military, and I think that the military is going to cure that too. You know what I'm saying? And I ran into the subculture within the United States military. And I have to tell you, I served with some of the finest Marines and Navy men that I have ever known in my life. These men were combat ready. They served with distinction. And they said, get over it. You're a sailor. You're a Marine. Act like it. Who gives a shit if you're gay? And they taught me so much. I got out of the military again with honorable discharge with distinction. That means that my eval never fell below 3.5. When I got out, I served in hospital, and I went back into the hospital field, and I worked as a cardiovascular technologist, and my disease was full-blown. Alcohol and cocaine. But I always saved some cocaine because I had to be in the cardiac catheterization lab at 6 breaking a.m. So I had to load up on the coffee and the C. You know, I used to call them CC mornings, you know, cocaine and coffee. And I would show up at the lab, and again, I performed. But I crashed and burned. So one day, this was back in 1985, I drove my brand new car. Everybody thought, Nelson's doing great. Look at this great job. He looks great. Great apartment, blah, blah, blah. Inside, I'm freaking dying. And so here I am, successful at work and all this good stuff, success. And I drive to Reese Park on Long Island with a hose that I attached to the exhaust and fed it into the cabin of my brand new 4Runner, and I was going to die. Popped 15 milligrams of Valium, smoked half a joint for good old time's sake, and that was it. Well, when you do that, what happens is that the windows steam up, so no one can see in. I didn't anticipate the police to come. So here I am, I'm coughing away inside, just, you know, a lot of drama. Left my little suicide note, you know. And here come the cops. All right, and they start banging on the side of the truck, and they go, "All right, stop that shit, get the hell out of here." And I'm like, "Oh my god," because they thought I was, you know, taking care of business in there with someone. You know what I mean? Because the windows are steamed up, and so here I am. I'm driving away, and I'm trying to drive away without them seeing that I have this hose. Wasn't pretty. The next, a couple of days later, I show up at work, and when you do that, you get like this reddish hue to you for the carbon monoxide. And my coworkers are going, because it was like Thanksgiving in New York City, and they were like, "How'd you get sun?" I was like, "Oh, I went up north, and the sun off the snow, and I made something." So here I am, you know, I'm leaving my job, I'm crazier than shit, tried suicide, but I ain't giving up on the booze and the cocaine. So I'm reading the Bible. Hennessy in one hand, couple of lines here, and I'm reading the Bible saying, "Where are you, God? Where are you? Where are you, God? Where are you, God?" You know what I mean? Guzzle. You know what I mean? And I'm still suicidal. So I decided to move to Virginia. And that was in March of 1986. And March 9th, I picked up the phone and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And this guy answered the phone and he said, "Can you not drink today?" I said, "I don't know." Because you see, by that time, if the wind blew, I had a drink. All right? If I saw someone on TV having a drink, I had a drink. If someone mentioned the word drink, I had a drink. It was like there was no gauge anymore. You know what I mean? I was drinking because I had to drink. I could not stop. And by this time, I was no longer a functional alcoholic. So I said, "I don't know. I'll try." And he goes, "Well, look, if you can not drink, meet me at such and such place, and I will meet you there." And I did, and I showed up. And his name is T-Roy, and I got to tell you, when I celebrated my 20th anniversary, I went to that place that he had me meet him at the Methodist Church in Virginia Beach, and he was chairing the meeting. Here's the other thing, is that four of the people that I got sober with were there too, and they were celebrating. I mean, it gives me chills. So, T-Roy's there, and he goes, "Come on in. My name is T-Roy. Nice to meet you. Have a seat. Introduce me to all these people and whatnot." And you know what it is when you're a newcomer? You're like, "I don't want to freaking meet anybody. Get the hell away from me." And they go, "Oh, so nice to meet you. Hey, welcome back. Keep coming back." And I'm like, "Get the hell away from me." You know? And I saw what they had, and I was like, "You know what? I'm a bright guy. I'm smart. I'm slum child, make good. I can figure this out." Make a long story short, my sobriety date is July 28th, 1988. And the reason why I did not get it on March 9th, 1986 was because I did not want to do this. See, this program is just a suggestion until you pick up this freaking book and then you see the muss. So when they said it's just a suggestion, an alcoholic like me was like, okay, that's fine. I can take a suggestion. But when I picked up that big book, there were the muss. I got to tell you that throughout that process in my first couple of years of sobriety, some old demons came back to haunt me. I told you about the molestations, right? Those were things I was never going to tell anyone. And I had to start telling my sponsors about it. I started having to learn, what the hell do I do about it? So the God of my understanding, I'm just knowing that for Nelson to learn, I have to help someone else. So what I did was that I started driving those drunk vans, you know, taking people to meetings. Mm-hmm. And that led to me being a mental health tech at an adolescent unit, which led to me being a mental health counselor at an adolescent unit, and then program coordinator for that adolescent unit. And those kids there raised me. I worked with kids from 13 to 17, and they were mine. Okay? They had parents, but you know what? I loved them, and they loved me, and they helped me get sober. After that, I had the amazing opportunity to become a program coordinator for men's unit, high-functioning men's unit. These were doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs that crashed and burned due to their compulsivities and addictions. And those men helped me become a man. Those men, as they opened themselves up for the first time in their lives, they opened themselves up and let it all out, and we grew together. After that, I went and I did family counseling with the Institute of Family Centered Services, and I focused on families with issues of addiction. And you know what? Those families helped me learn how I could have a relationship with my family. So when we talk about here service work, working with others, we're not saying that because it's so nice. We're saying it because that's the way it works. I have to give it away so I can get it. It is when the teacher becomes the student is when he is being of service to someone else. And I don't understand why when I do that, I feel better, but I do. So, I've had a phenomenal, phenomenal sponsorship. And there's a gentleman up in Virginia. He's got my heart. His name is Joe C. from Kentucky. Right? And his wife, Femi, was my Al-Anon sponsor. And for 15 years, those two people raised me. And Joe saw me early on. He said, because I was like, hey Joe, it's raining, what do I do? Get an umbrella. Click. Hey Joe, I'm feeling this, what do I do? Pray about it. Click. So finally he was like, you know Nelson, it's going to take a whole village for you to get sober. I need you to get phone numbers. And I think what he was saying was, give me a freaking break. But you know, Joe said things that just touched me to the core, and he's still a big part of my life. And here, you know, to tell you, I have sponsees here who are my teachers. I have my sponsor here who is my teacher. You know, when I go to a meeting and a newcomer speaks, I listen because there are my teachers. One of my bosses who... she and I did not get along at all. She became my teacher. But what is it that makes all these people in my life my teacher? It's that the God of my understanding says, you know what? You ain't all that. Okay? So shut up and listen. Look and learn. You're not a done product. The thing about this program is that we don't hand out certificates of completion. You know, I mean, Denise and I were talking the other day, you know, and she's celebrating 25 years, and you know, and I've got 23 going on 24, and we said, Welcome to Recovery 2.0. Okay? Every day, if I don't have the humility of, I'm one drink away, and I need your help, I'm going to get drunk. Because I know what my track record is. You know, when I showed up today, people were, wow, you look sharp. You know why? Because it's an honor for me to be standing here on birthday night, and there's people picking up 25 years, people picking up 1 year, people 2 years. There may be people here picking up a white chip, and you're asking me to speak, and you all saved my life. Yes, I'm going to put on a tie. I'm going to get my Italian shoes on again. I'm from New York. Okay? You got to have good shoes in New York. All right? But you all saved my life. And the thing is that when I was trying to get sober in the beginning, you know what I mean? But I kept saying, oh, I got this. And then I'd end up drunk. You saved my life by saying, you know what, Nelson, just keep coming back. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. I had a desire. And because you said that and you kept reminding me of that, I kept coming back until at some point it took. But I do have to tell you, if you're a chronic relapser like I was, that your recovery starts to lose its potency. And the disease gets that much stronger. And there came a time when I said, oh shit, it's about even now. And if I don't do something, I'm not going to get it. That scared me. Because I saw what my life was going to be coming to. I have family members that, you know, and the other thing, I had one sponsor who said, you know, I was telling him, and I was like, well, you know, my father was an alcoholic. He says, really? Your father told you he was an alcoholic? I said, no, but, and he just said, well, you got no right to diagnose anybody. I was like, ooh. You know, I fired him. All right. This is a self-diagnosing disease. And he is absolutely correct. I have no right to tell anybody they're an alcoholic. But it is my prayer that they will come to accept the fact that they are. Because until I accepted I had the disease of alcoholism, I could not receive the treatment. You see, I have to accept I'm an alcoholic. That no human power could relieve me of this obsession. And that God could and would if he were sought. But you know, I had a God. But you know what? I kept mixing him up with me. So I needed your guidance to teach me, Nelson, this is what your willpower is for. Your willpower is to get your ass up and get to a meeting. Your willpower is to pick up the phone and call somebody. That's what your willpower is for. Because your willpower can't work on this disease. This is a disease. I don't take my disease personal, but I know that it'll be with me for the rest of my life. I am not a disease. I am the son of my God. The program gave me that. But I have this thing, and I'm grateful for it. Because you see, through the program and being an alcoholic, I've picked up some tools that I wouldn't have picked these up. I wouldn't. I'm not that wise. It's through pain that I pick this stuff up. There's some people that are just enlightened, say, yes, I will follow this path. And then you got people like me who says, this shit is rough. Where are you going? I'm going that way too. All right. Pain is a great motivator. And I have to tell you that in sobriety, many of those Marines and sailors that were honorable men, good men, willing to die for their country, combat ready, died to a little freaking virus that at the time nobody wanted to acknowledge. I lost 15 of my friends in 10 years. I did not drink. You know why? Because the last time I picked up my white chip, my friend Ben was handing out the chips, and when he saw me get up for that white chip, he says, oh man, no, not again. And I was like, give me that freaking chip. I'm going to shove it up. So I got my white chip. And when I looked at my home group members and I saw them looking down at the floor, I realized I've disappointed these people. And I learned there that I work my program, but this is not my sobriety. You all give me the gift of sobriety. By me working my program, I ready myself to receive the gift of sobriety that you give me. You give me the sobriety that I have today. So when those people were dying and my heart was breaking, I did not drink. I buried my father 4 times. Thank you very much. 4 times it took him to die. 10 years. All right, this is it. Everybody's rushing, funeral, everything. And he pulled through. I did not drink. I've had bosses that you would say they are the incarnation of Satan. I did not drink. My mother, who saved my life time and time again, who I know that her prayers over that juvenile delinquent I told you about kept me alive. When that woman died, I never felt pain like that in my life. I couldn't leave the parking lot for 45 minutes at the funeral parlor. I said, this is a pain that I've never experienced before. And I realized she is giving birth to me again. Except this time, I'm the one feeling the labor pains. I did not drink. And the program says, Nelson, if you are willing to do what it takes to stay sober through this process, you are going to find a new way of living. When my mother died, I did not realize it until 4 years later, but my spiritual program exploded into a realm that I had never been before. I would not have received that gift from my mother had I not been sober. So in sobriety, it's been lovely, it's been wonderful, you know, it's just been great, you know. I did all the things that I was told and, you know, had 2 houses and 2 cars and 2 dogs. And, you know what I mean? I felt like Noah, you know, 2 of everything. Because I also suffered from the disease of enough, it's never enough. The compulsion to drink was lifted from me. Right, by God, thank you very much. Only so that I could work on my defects of character. And I had this thing that I wasn't enough, right? So I had to get stopped to be enough. And that didn't fill it. But I didn't drink over it. I kept coming back. I'm a big meeting maker. Okay? I firmly believe in going to meetings. And so when I come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a reverence I have. When people show up late to a meeting, I'm like, let me see your sponsor. Okay? If people leave early and they're habitually leaving early, I'm like, see, this is sacred ground for me. The well don't gather here, but we gather here to get well. There's a certain respect I have to have for that myself. When in recovery, and after I got done with coming to terms that I have a shitload of defects of character, someone very lovingly said, maybe you should revisit step 6. I said, all right, I'll do that. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And it starts like this. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. And man, I had to get busy and I had to get honest. One of the things that I made Central my home group for a few reasons, and one of the reasons was that I love the diversity up here. Love it. Men, women, newcomers, old timers, those in between, you know. I love that. I really, really do. I need that. It's in my blood. I get around too many people that are the same, it irks me. You know what I mean? It's like kind of like, oh God, somebody throw paint on it or something. You know what I mean? I gotta have the variety. I do. And this is sacred ground. So one of the things that, you know, I tell people is that when we look at each other to please, at least when you look at me, please be kind. Because you don't know exactly the demons that lurk within me. And I don't know necessarily the demons that lurk within you. But when I come in here, I need kindness. And yeah, I know that people like to talk. But when we talk about each other and it's not for the highest and best of that person, but because we're feeling insecure, we need to take that to our sponsors. I have a phrase for that. Don't piss in my drinking water. I come here to drink the living waters that Alcoholics Anonymous brings to me. So I'm a little guarded sometimes with that, you know what I mean? Maybe a little possessive. Because there's something that happens here that I want to share with you. And this has been my experience. And that is that you all gave me a life that I can't say it's always been lovely, but it's always been interesting. I've made a lot of big mistakes in sobriety, but I kept coming back. And because you all loved me unconditionally, even with 20 some odd years of sobriety, you gave me the courage to keep standing up. I don't feel like killing myself anymore. And I want to end with this. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you should do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you don't have. See to it that your relationship with him, her, it is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. As you understand him. As you understand him. Admit your faults to him, her, it, and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past and give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you so much.